read some poems for you tonight from a new collection, Twin Edwards. The first one I'd like to read is called Black Dream Bird. It was yesterday that I was a crow, with horse hair in my beak and my nest half built and my black feathers shining through the mist of belonging to the world, of knowing how to balance on the air of the world, and my shadow the same colour as myself. Even when the farmer tied my body lifeless to the wire in warning and my bones poked out, still I flapped in the wind and raised my wings, my beak hinged open to the call of air. Next poem is called My Mother's Coat. I don't remember her wearing it. There's not even a photograph. I don't know how she afforded it and her teacher's salary and my father a booking office clerk for the railways who brought his wages home in a brown envelope on a Friday night. It was a film star's item of clothing with its mink collar. At least, that's how I remember it. Hanging in the wardrobe, smelling of mothballs, heavy as a quilt when I'd secretly take it from its hanger and slip my adolescent self into it. Feeling the silk lining against arms and legs, folding it around my body, caressing the tight, unyielding curls, black and shiny, almost alien, something unnatural seeping through the glamour. A darkness felt in the heart, a repellent attraction. I wondered what sort of animal had a coat like that. In the days after the funeral, my sister-in-law threw it out with all the other stuff where I'd have kept it. It takes the pelts of 30 lambs to make one Persian lamb coat. They must be under 3 days old, ideally fecal, so as to have that deep blackness, those most desirable close curls. Do any of you remember those? They used to be called astrakhan coats. These strange kind of strange things. Yeah, that seemed to be a generation of people had them. When I was a teenager, I really loved horror stories. I used to read them all the time, me and my friend. And this poem is called The 60th Year of Horror Stories. When I was young, I loved to scare myself with stories read beneath the blankets, late at night by the light of a torch, Curse of the Monkey's Paw, The Haunted Doll's House, Weight of a Cat on the End of a Bed When You Know There's No Cat There. Now, all the what-ifs follow me about, sit on my chest, restrict my breath, the late night phone call, blue lights, the knock at the door, the cocked gun of my children's lives pressed to my temple day in, day out, diagnosis, the unlatched gate, horses escaping into the night, the hooked beak of grief. Now it's real. A number of years ago, I was over in London and went to the Tate Modern, and there was a Rothko room in there. I don't know if you've been to it. I went into it kind of really quite cynical about, oh, they're just big blocks of colour, you know, what are they going to look like? And this is the kind of experience I had sitting with the paintings. I was lucky enough to go in at a time when there weren't many people around, so I was able to spend time with them. In the Rothko room, black on maroon, red on maroon. Sitting here in silence, you could believe in soul, or something like it. Some connection to the universe that comes in through the eyes, vibrates to sternum, guts, marrow. You find yourself crying. Having that connection, you know how unconnected you have been. As I'm sure you'll know, there are what's known in the north and well known everywhere as the disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a poem about one of the disappeared, a teenage girl. He lived very close to where we lived, and he was the same age as my younger daughter. So for that reason, I think it kind of struck home really powerfully to me. She was called Lisa Dorian. And this is Elegy for Patricia Dorian, who was her mother. To have your daughter taken and not know where to find her, not even the bones of her, body that you carried in your body, the bones that belong to you, her sweet baby bones. Those searching in sea tides, boots of cars, shucks and ditches, and holes in the ground and closed faces. Could the body of a girl be folded into an oil drum, sealed and dumped as if rubbish, the most appalling of places? And in your imagination, worse even, but not worse than not knowing. You wouldn't let them forget her. You begged for one man with a conscience, none were to be found. From posters in shops, on telegraph poles, newspaper articles, each new anniversary, year after ever, forever, your daughter still smiling at the gone world. Whenever I'm on holiday, I love visiting cathedrals, just to see the architecture and the atmosphere of them. And this poem came out of a trip to Spain, a trip to Seville, and it's called Suffering Jesus. Only some cathedrals soar, others squat, brutish, an unrelenting weight on the shoulders of the faithful and the tourists, as in Seville. And Christ here, amongst the Inca gold and glorious Ferdinand and Isabella, he looks so tired of dying, crucified in perpetuity, never risen. His are the eyes of a dog who has a cruel master. The cathedral in Seville, I don't know if you've been there, but it's just full of gold, of Inca gold plundered from the by Ferdinand and Isabella. Myth making. It's as if we might have made them up. Like the night we camped on a hill in Donegal above the sea and under a clear sky, watching the Perseids smear sudden streaks of brilliance across our holiday. And it was like eternity or timelessness or time or something. Our two young daughters awake after midnight and watching with us. They both remember too, I've asked. Even after 20 years, light is still seared across their retinas the night when. As was mentioned, I did a collaboration with a Wexford artist, Peggy Lennon, who does incredible equestrian portraits, paintings of horses. And I became really fascinated in the history of the thoroughbred horse. There are three Arab stallions, and every thoroughbred alive today can have their DNA traced back to these three Arab stallions. So I became really fascinated by it. And there's really interesting stories about them all. The first one, the Bairi Turk, was captured in outside Buda and given to an English army officer, and was then ridden, came to England on King William's ships, and was actually ridden at the Battle of the Boyne, stopping off to win a race in Downpatrick on the way, just by. So anyway, the story of these three stallions was absolutely fascinating. And then I started to think, what about the mares? What about the female line? And you know, strangely enough, it wasn't so easy to find out the history of the females. Their names weren't recorded in the same way as the stallions were. So this poem kind of came out of that. It's called Mare. I am not an obedient or dutiful woman. I never come when I'm called. When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm thirsty, I drink. But I'm thinking of the herd of horses kept from water for 3 days, then released. A stampede to the river to be slaked at last. I'm thinking of those 5 mares who, when the prophet sounded the battle horn, the call to war, turned back despite their thirst. These are the foundation mares, the daughters of the wind that bred the 12 royal mares that bred the winners. Their genes splicing with the 3 stallions, faithfulness mingling with pride, duty with self-determination. Perfect combination for passing the post first. I have dwelt in the small universe of the womb before the world, felt the power of the womb to expel into the first sorrow, first joy, the abandonment of being, being. I have been the universe for you. The circle of the belly, the world, the life, the mystery of love. Have you ever heard the soft sound of a mare whickering to her foal? What whip will be led to its back? What race will it win or lose? Scanned in foal, month after month, her belly became heavier, swollen until her teats began to fill and drip with milk. But as more time went by and no foal came, we saw it was a phantom she had grown, replacing the clustered beginning she'd lost long ago. When most afraid for you, daughter, I think of her lost embryo. I'd take you back into myself, every cell, each chromosome. I'd have you back before birth, before conception, all your future still ahead. I'd hold you as an imagined thing, safe. My older daughter is works with horses and has always kind of had a great, as I have, a great love for horses. And going to poetry readings and reading poetry books and things, I kept coming across people using horses as metaphors, and it always seemed as if these horses kind of mysteriously appeared, or you know. So anyway, as a result of that, I wrote this poem, which is called Not Metaphors, and it's for my daughter Claire. I do not accidentally come across them in misty fields or old gateways. I'm aware of where they are day in, day out, and though always astonished by the centuries in their eyes, the grace and beauty of their being, I also know how much they piss and shit. I've wheeled thousands of barrowloads of dung to the muck heap. My horses need fed, groomed, shod. They strain tendons, cut themselves, get ulcers, viruses, mud fever and need the vet. Colic during the night. Are they warm enough, safe enough? Is that one losing weight? Is that one sacroiliac flaring up? My horses are schooled and taught to carry themselves properly. Work through from behind, maintain a light contact, meet a jump on the right stride, bascule to perfection, leave the poles up. That's a lot of work for me and my horses, and sometimes we make mistakes, fall and get hurt, actually hurt. It's another horse poem, I'm afraid. Irrevocable things. We lead him to the chosen spot, a bright day without clouds, autumn sun still holding its heat. He trusts us. We've never given him reason not to trust us. The sky blue drug goes in. We see him, feel it hit, and then we watch helpless the violence of his falling and terrible tumbling over himself, this desperate, wrenching refusal to stay down, though unable to stay up. It goes on forever, until he's prone at last and Claire puts her hand over his eye and he gives in to the shuddering darkness. A bullet finishes it. It has dragged the heart from me. I want to cry, wait, horse, wait, come back, we'll do it again. It was a kindness that we meant. All the regret for every hurt I've ever caused, sadness for everything I've ever lost, is pouring through this rent, this wound, his drawn back lips, his emptied eyes. I told you I wasn't sure if I should read it. Like everybody else, the whole kind of the idea of what we're doing to the world and climate change and all of that really pressing on my mind. And I recently became a granny, so it kind of feels even more urgent. And this poem is kind of about the idea that, you know, what would happen if we decided that we weren't the most important thing. It's called The Return. Like the viola d'amore, our heartstrings lie below the heartstrings of the horse, so that we harmonize through resonance. And there is truth that lives outside of time in vivid dream. Raskolnikov's little sorrel beast, the boy who kissed her dying eyes and lips. Memory, perhaps, of when we were not the center of the universe, the locus of its consciousness, not master, owner. We could yet set down the axe. Vaslav Nijinsky dances the war in St. Moritz in front of the aristocrats. He dances frightening things. Finished, he declares, the little horse is tired. Nietzsche, weeping in the piazza in Turin, weeps for the beaten horse, the beaten self. Sing me a new song. If I could remember where the bones were buried, I would dig them up. The wings of scapulas, the skulls of air, the golden saddlecloths, reconstruct the horses, the black horse, the white horse, and the horse of fire. Each year I do the fence. Hour after long hour, creosote, brush, repetitive movement along the horizontal length of it, then up and down the planted vertical that keeps it standing. Intricacies of sky and earth and time, preserving the plank, stopping the posts from rotting, keeping the space intact. I like to step back occasionally, knowing that when it is finished, it will need done again. Eventually, there's no finesse to it, no artistry, except persistence. And what each year brings cannot all be mended. There's algae, splitting, looseness. I tie back my hair and get on. This next poem came from being asked to contribute a poem to an anthology to celebrate Ovid. Reading through all the kind of things, all the stories, and trying to read through it, I came to the conclusion of the title is going to this poem, which is A Queer Few Things. Over a lifetime, the gods make many things of you. One terrible winter, I was an iris. Do not assume that bulbs remember spring flowering. I've sat down at a table laid with the corpse of my child and been expected to eat. And I have soared, of course, seen how the world is spread wide for those who fly. I've killed with beak and talons to fill the little gaping throats. I've asked for the chariot's reins and set my whole world blazing. I have been fox and snake and bear. I have been stone and waterfall. I have been loved too much and not enough. I have been split open by the first green shoot I've been folded neat and safe inside my shell. I have been both grit and pearl. I have been the earth's gold veins, the aching rift between the continents. I have been a heart hunted through the darkening woods, and the heart pierced by arrows, chambers breached and flooded. I was the vanishing point too. I was sitting on the sofa one night with my husband, and we were watching just random things on TV, and this little piece of black and white film came on. That came out of watching that film, and it's called Archive Film, Franz Reichelt, The Flying Tailor. He was born in 1879 and he died on the 4th of February 1912. We see him, black and white, standing on the ledge, first platform of the Eiffel Tower, 150 feet above Parisian streets, despite the pleas of friends and onlookers. An overstuffed bat or a badly knitted toy, swathes of material swinging beneath his outstretched arms. We see him doubt, hesitate, step back, forward, back again, then forwards over the edge, and there's nothing graceful in his fall or impact, nothing we don't expect, except for the almost negligible millisecond of suspension when we remember the miraculous. Huge amount of time tired sitting in the kitchen looking out the window. We're lucky enough to look out over some fields. So this is kind of came as a result of sitting looking out the window. It's called Prey. This summer passed, day after day, I watched the buzzard rise from her stand of trees to hunt. Watched her describe her wide, effortless circles as a wheel set in motion turns. This autumn night, she has gyred silently above my sleep, so that now at 4 a.m. I lie awake beneath her dream, and a small, secretive animal of self trembles. Just years ago, a good friend of mine gave me a really beautiful stone Buddha, and this poem is it's called Stone. His companions, a little cast iron flying pig with stumpy wings, and a brass dragonfly. For 12 years, Buddha has sat, eyes closed, legs crossed, hands held cup shape in his lap. I have watched him through this time, most impatient and unperturbed creatures in this stone incarnation. A perfect spring perch for the crows, who carry twigs and horsehair in their beaks, rest on him a moment before their onward lift to build their chimney nests. He doesn't mind the white shit crime that runs down his face, across his eyelids. Rain will wash it off again. Winter snowfalls cap his head and cape his shoulders, gather on his thighs. He does not shiver shift beneath. Summer sweet peas curl their tendrils round his feet. Mossy autumn furs him green among the fallen leaves, and he is neither disturbed nor pleased, seated outside my kitchen window, whilst inside I grow less steady.